Hi, this is Tom. Welcome to the first episode of Under the Scales, the almost weekly podcast about the band Phish from the fans' perspective. Also, of course, from my perspective, as a friend of the band's and as a songwriter. I'll interview people and try to light up some darkened corners. Maybe stir up a little dust, dislodge some memories. This particular episode is about a songwriting weekend in 1997 where Trey and I wrote a bunch of songs that eventually became Phish standards. In this episode, I'll play a few of those original songs. Today, my friend Stephen Tebow Thomas is coming over. He and I have gone to a lot of Phish shows together. We think more than 150. If you've met me at a show, chances are you've met Tebow. He also goes way back to the 1980s Princeton Day School gang where Trey and I first stumbled upon each other. Today I'm going to read him a story that I wrote a long time ago about this weekend with Trey in Vermont. This story was lost on the internet and then found again to my delight. So I have a cold case of Sculpin IPAs ready to go. Now I just need Tebow to show up.
Interpretation. Reflection. Misdirection. That's my job.
It really is my job. I write words for Phish. I'm Tom Marshall, and this is Under the Scales. All right, finally Tebow showed up after a long time. I've been waiting for him all day.
Hello.
Hey, Tebow. So I already explained kind of who you are, but what I didn't say was that I'm hoping that you're going to be a frequent guest and co-host and all that stuff. So this is Tebow's first time here. His real name is Stephen Thomas. So here we go. I'm just going to dive right in. The thing that I wrote, the title is The Songwriting Weekend. You ready, Tebow?
All in.
All right. Part one is called The Beater. I arrived at the Burlington Airport one fine spring day. Possibly this was over a Memorial Day weekend between 6 to 9 years ago. I'm still not certain of the date, and looked around for Trey, who is always late, who is going to pick me up and drive me to a farmhouse for a writing session. We were in a phase where we would go away for long weekends and write a slew of songs together. Phish Inc.,
meaning at the time Beth Montori, Paul Languedoc, and Pete Carini,
would rent an old house in a beautiful secluded setting somewhere, near Stowe usually, and fill it to the brim with musical instruments, recording equipment, frozen pizza, and beer. Then they would leave, and we wouldn't hear from them again. The result, 3 or 4 days later, was usually about 15 songs, of which possibly 8 or 9 were usable as Phish songs.
Wait, let's nail down exactly when that happened. Writing session was that?
Yeah. Well, so there were a lot of, I think we rented, when you count them all, there were about 4 or 5 farmhouses in Stowe.
And they all had different writing session names. So yeah, you can sort of narrow it down.
Yeah. So the very first one was 97, but that was in the winter. And that was, we called that one Pecked by the Dove. And that one was Piper Saw It Again, Limb by Limb, Ghost, Dogs Stole Things, Velvet Sea, and a couple others that, you know, that didn't become Phish songs. The one that we're talking about in this particular story, I've pretty much narrowed down to a session we call Trampled by Lambs, also in Stowe, Vermont, and also in 97, but this was 5/25/97 was the first day of a 3-day session. In this session, we wrote Dirt, Vultures, Water in the Sky, a song called Flat Tornadoes, a song called Mark of the Unicorn, Waking Up, Twist, Jennifer, and I don't think that's Jennifer Dances. I think it's a different Jennifer. I might be able to play some of these for you. And then a song called I Don't Care. Tebow, do you remember I Don't Care?
I do. And I believe Fishman might have sang it a couple times.
I think maybe it was Fishman. And it was one of those that he
Like he hones in on weird songs that usually wouldn't stand a chance of becoming a Phish song, and brings them to life every now and then. Like Setting Sail. Do you remember Setting Sail?
Just tell the lyrics to that right now. Just that one verse.
Setting sail, I hit a whale. My ship sank right away. Losing face, I left this place. I hated sailing anyway. And Fishman loved it so much because he said he thought it was the ultimate sour grapes. But anyway, back to the reading of this thing. So here we are. We're in Stowe. I'm just landing in the Burlington airport. So this is back to the story now. I don't think Trey picked me up twice in the same vehicle. Now, you might think this would be a treat. You know, what exotic toy is Trey going to have this time? Maybe a Ferrari? A Lotus? No. Hey, there's a Corvette. Is it Trey? Nope, not Trey. The car of choice was almost always a Beater. His Isuzu Trooper's passenger door didn't work, and we both had to enter the driver's side. His Cadillac Eldorado had a suspension that possibly didn't include springs or shocks, and felt like the expansion joints on the highway could shatter your vertebrae. He had an old Ford 150 pickup, a crappy Subaru, I think, just a long, lame list of simply uninspiring and unmemorable cars. His house, his studio, now that's where time and care and thought, and of course money, went. But cars? Forget it. So I confess, even I was a little surprised when he pulled up in the biggest piece of shit on wheels that I have ever seen. Motorhomes are never that pretty to look at, but this looked like it had once possibly been a cross between a very ugly Lake Champlain houseboat and a cargo container on a large military transport plane during the Korean War. I didn't want to get into it. It had a lame, weird vibe. I couldn't help thinking of the depressing roadside gravel lots this camper had visited while the Vermont occupants drank warm beer and watched the occasional car drive by on the deserted road and called it camping. I felt like I might catch some hideous virus that they had left behind. I drank about 5 beers before we stopped for our customary Grand Union provisioning run. Everything was great. Trey and I were singing and laughing like we were back in high school, but I still had a creepy Deliverance meets Texas Chainsaw Massacre premonition lurking in my head, brought on by my first encounter with Trey's motorhome. In the parking lot, we met the girl. Part 2. The girl. Anything you need to add, Tebow?
Nope.
All right. Tebow's drinking wine. All right. The girl. I saw her first, sitting near the store entrance in a shopping cart. I thought, how cute. A girl is playing while her mom is buying groceries inside. Still, it seemed strange, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. Neither could Trey. We were transfixed, and we grew silent as we approached. From afar, she appeared to be quite pretty. But that changed, and as we got closer, she had a grim look to her, and her clothes were dirty and old. Then the hair on the back of my neck began to rise when we saw that she was looking at us intently and smiling. Then it also became apparent that she wasn't 6 or 8, as I originally had thought. Instead, she was a very small 12 or 14. She said, "Hi, I like your truck," in a pure West Virginia dialect. I was at a loss, but Trey quickly took control. "Thanks, I just got it. Do you like it?" And she said, "You can't park it there. My uncle will see it." I must have visibly started, because she then fixed her gaze on me and said, "That's his truck, you know." Meanwhile, we had never slowed down, and we gave the girl a somewhat wide berth and stammered some incomprehensible response and stepped into the store. I was shaken, but Trey wasn't. He was just riding the moment, and I thought, perhaps this is what living in Vermont is like. Sometimes you just have to humor the local people. So I tried to put it out of my head. Tebow, I got to tell you, there was like this girl, like sitting in the in the shopping cart with her legs sort of coming out the top. You know, she was in the part where toddlers go, but her legs were like over the handle. And she, like, there was something, you know how in like weird horror movies, like a contorted version of like a toddler will like all inexplicably like go up the
and
wall
and, and then go across the ceiling
and then go across the ceiling. She looked like she was bent like that. And so already, I mean, honestly, this was really, really happening.
Well, I love that her playground was a shopping cart in the parking lot.
Well, you know,
you make do.
In the store, things were funnier than usual. Trey pulled a carton of cigarettes out of a huge case as a joke. He was going to toss them into the shopping cart, I suppose to make me have to deal with returning them during checkout. I should mention, Trey enjoys the making the other guy's day more difficult kind of humor, which I also am well versed in.
And of course, which is sort of trickles down to then from Trey and band members to you to roadies to, and then eventually it comes to us and it's usually some kind of abuse. Well, but it starts at the top.
Exactly. I think Paige was the one who coined the term, it's not amusement, it's abusement. It was hilarious when he said it, except I was, as usual, the brunt of the joke. I think I told you a few days ago, Tebow, that this memory came to me. I was lucky enough to, you know, every now and then be able to go for maybe 3 or 4 shows on the bus, on tour with Fish. And I would have my own bunk. And this was back when, before they all had their own buses. And I would just be sort of, you know, a member of the bus. And I think the band and Brad Sands at the time were just like hungry for new blood on the bus.
That's right.
And so people used to say to me like, hey, you're so lucky you get to go for free and stay for free and all that. And I remember honestly thinking, it's not free. I pay dearly. I really, really pay
fresh,
dearly.
Fresh blood.
Yeah. And one of my most, like, the only one, like, if you were to ask me, like, so what happened on the bus? I mean, every single one of them is a fucking comedian, a hilarious comedian.
They really are.
But the only one I can really remember, and Brad especially, too, like, there were 5 of the sharpest, you know, knife-sharp humor. And I had no chance because, you know, they would all turn their attention on the new guy.
And they were road weary. So they were, you know, well versed.
Yeah, they were punchy. And usually, like, you know, they were all adrenaline after the show, whereas, like, I was, you know, thinking about sleep. And they were just, like, pumped and ready to attack. I came on I came on the bus once after a show, and the least likely guy, Paige, for some reason just like opened up on me about my hair. And I gotta admit, I was sensitive back then because before I learned about hair product, which I used, you know, I use a lot now, possibly more than shampoo, it was like my hair would do this. Do you remember, Tebow? It'd like do yeah. this thing where
my like you mom said helmet.
It, yeah. My mom called it the helmet, hair helmet. And it was just, what did you call me?
Christopher Robin.
Oh, yeah.
In so like 6th, 7th grade, Kip and I, my brother would call you Christopher Robin as we went, pulled up and picked you up. You looked like him.
Was Christopher Robin like just from the book?
Yeah,
Winnie
it was
the Pooh?
Just a sketch. If you read the original book, it's just a sketch of him and I'll dig it out.
A. Milne had drawn right. something and right. that you guys, so it wasn't like in popular, it wasn't like a movie or anything.
It was just a sketch, yeah, of the hard copy of the first edition.
And somehow that
whatever
became
year that was.
And then another guy, I still to this day have no idea what this is. I think it might be a comic strip, but someone also called me Prince Valiant. And to my great detriment, I think I let Paige know. Both Christopher Robin and Prince Valiant. So I got on the bus probably with a severe like helmet head hairdo going. Back then, I didn't cut my hair that much either. So when it went bad, it went really bad. And so I was kind of like, you know, I was taking the abuse. And finally, I just said to Paige, you know, give me a break. I'm having a bad hair day. And Paige helpfully offered that he thinks that I'm having a bad hair life. Where am I? Oh, yeah, about the humor. So Trey enjoys making the other guy's day more difficult.
Hello,
Hello, listeners. This is Tom with a brief mid-podcast message to remind you that I'm always looking for fish-related stories and topics, and I'm always looking for new subjects and new people to interview. If you feel like you might be able to contribute to this podcast, go to underthescales.com and click the Tell Your Story button. I read every legitimate submission, so don't hesitate. Follow our Twitter to stay up to date at Under the Scales. Now back to the show.
But the joke backfired on him when the entire case opened and about 30 cartons of cigarettes cascaded onto the floor. Tebow, it's one of these cases that you see, you know, like tucked into the corner of a Target's or Walmart
right.
that is just like stacked to the ceiling with, you know, Marlboro containers.
The big cartons.
Huge cartons.
Just stacked on each other.
Right. And right at eye level, there's like a slot where one carton can fit out if you grab it. And so Trey was like trying to grab one out of the slot, but, you know, the people that worked there didn't secure the plastic cover, and the whole thing just hinged at the top open. And I would say about, you know, 60 boxes in this story, I say 30 cartons, but it was a lot. It was enough that I think Trey actually had to sit down as they fell onto him. And it was just fucking hilarious. It was perfect retribution. Anyway, opened and about 30 cartons of cigarettes cascaded onto the floor. It caused a commotion, and I thought everyone was enjoying the moment as extremely as I was until it became apparent that people were looking at me rather than Trey. And then I figured out that my high-pitched laughing, gasping for air was actually alarming people. It wasn't a fun realization because there were still many people around talking to us and saying stuff to me. And of course, there were those who recognized Trey. It was closing in on me. I told Trey I was going outside for a minute. I ran, walked past the registers toward the exit when I saw her again, looking at me through the glass. She was now out of the cart and standing near the exit, seemingly happy I was about to emerge alone. I did an immediate about face. In fact, when I saw her, I may have recoiled like when a horse sees a snake. At this point, I knew we were past pretending, that we were just two happy guys buying snack foods. The whole store knew that something terrible was happening, and we were somehow at the root of it. In fact, they were probably related to the girl. Of course, why else would she be out there alone? This store was bad. The girl was bad. We had to leave now, before her uncle comes. So, part three of the story is called Before Her Uncle Comes. Tebow, honestly, I was like, I think I was in this state where whatever emotion I was feeling was like amplified by like 60, you know? So like, like laughter immediately gave way to paranoia. And then as I was running to get out of that situation, I saw her and it immediately gave way to like the most horrendous feeling of terror and horror. I was absolutely petrified in a fucking Grand Union in Vermont.
In Vermont. And not Burlington, Vermont, but that, some little town in Vermont.
Stowe. It was Stowe.
Was it Stowe?
Yeah. And it was just, you know, it's a normal Grand Union and everyone in there was normal except me, I guess.
And the girl.
Well, yeah, there was definitely something up with the girl. Part three is called Before Her Uncle Comes. Trey didn't get it. In fact, things were going great for him. His good mood was contagious, fortunately. I calmed myself down in a minute or so just by following him around and listening to his running commentary. The rest of the shopping was uneventful. Lots of laughing, joking. The prior events were forgotten, and our minds were on jamming and writing some good songs. I wanted to sit down at a drum set and pound a little while Trey played bass. That's always fun, and a good bassist for a song or two, like Ghost, for instance. We checked out, bagged the groceries, paid, and then there she was, waiting, looking like she had to tell us something important. We had no choice but to face her. All the dread I had forgotten came back instantly, and I was frightened beyond belief of this girl, this demon, this little exorcist girl. As we exited the store, she knew she had us. We faced our doom. We walked toward her and waited for it. She smiled again and waited for us to draw close to her. When it came, it was worse than I could have possibly expected. She must have somehow cast a spell on me and determined how to creep me out completely. Remember, I was matching wits with a 14-year-old girl, and I was losing badly, barely hanging on. She said, "I saw someone jump into your truck and hide." I think I almost fainted. Trey stopped and said, "What?" She repeated it. "There's someone hiding in your truck." Then Trey laughed. He was somehow immune. I, on the other hand, wasn't at all. I was petrified. I didn't even want to get close to the camper. I knew her uncle was in there waiting, angry that it had been repossessed. He was going to knife us and take it back, or worse, knock us out and take us back to his farm for days of slow torture. Trey strode on and wouldn't listen to my insane rant about how we should call the police or just call a cab to get us and give the camper back to her uncle.
It's not Trey style to call the police.
No, true. But right then I remember trying to think in my mind, how can I convince him to, like, we'll get a cab, we'll put all these groceries in here, we don't need the camper.
You had options in your head, but.
But obviously they're completely nonsensical. Of course, we hadn't locked the thing. No one locks anything in Vermont. So Trey climbs in and I cautiously cower outside, listening for a gunshot or perhaps a scuffle. I call in, "Trey?" Apparently everything is fine. I ask him to open hatches and doors. I even look under the vehicle as he loads in the groceries. I see the girl is staring at us, possibly laughing. I feel like a fool. I had been had. Trey was right. He's Trey. He knows this game. This is Vermont, and this is what happens. That's a standard greeting here. Someone's hiding in your vehicle. I slowly gain confidence and get in the seat, and we drive away, and I even muster the courage to wave goodbye to the girl. The trip to the farmhouse went smoothly, and we opened a new case of beer and quickly forgot about the girl. We laughed it off. Silly us. Upon arriving, Paul was still at the house waiting for us for a last-minute sound check. So I unloaded the camper and packed the kitchen as Trey played crazy tunes while Paul explained the various recording options to him. Later that night, much later, Trey asked for a Bud, the kind of beer he had waiting in the back of the camper for me when he got me at the airport. We had been drinking Harpoon and Anchor Steam and Sam Adams. I had totally forgot about the case of Bud in the camper. In fact, I must have left it on the camper. So I went out into the dark Vermont night to get it. The camper seemed especially murky and yet warm. The light that I had found earlier to illuminate the interior didn't work. That's funny. I knew it was a straight shot to the back of the camper to the case of Bud, so I just groped my way there. But I only found a wet cloth of some sort. I poked around in pitch blackness when I had a horrifying thought. I still get chills today. I can't really even explain the depth of my terror. I was grasping something the uncle had left in place of the Bud, a bloody piece of clothing. The Bud was definitely gone. We had at most drunk 10 of the 24 bottles. There was a box of beers and ice that was just gone. The girl wasn't lying. That meant, well, someone was hiding on board and was still there. I broke the door of the camper while escaping. It never again latched correctly. I screamed for Trey. We got lights. We searched. Nothing. The rag was something he said he had never seen. It was dirty, white, like the girl's dress, and it was wet with some form of sticky, clear liquid. The Bud case was never found. As usual, Trey laughed it off. He probably thought I was trying to scare him with an elaborate hoax. Maybe he was doing the same to me. I don't know. I don't want to know. I try not to think about it too much. The end. I think what could make this episode, this podcast, classic is if I play some of the songs, at least snippets of the songs, so that we recorded that night. So the playlist is Dirt, Vultures, Water in the Sky. That Water in the Sky, I remember, is a particularly sort of upbeat version that I don't think ever was kind of duplicated. I mean, it was always an upbeat song. I really love their slow version they've been playing lately too.
Yeah.
But that version was just like so keyboard centric, and something about it, it was one of my prouder moments on keyboards. I probably couldn't duplicate it today. I lost all my chops. Instrumental.
That was, yeah, an instrument.
Mark of the Unicorn, I think, is lost in the sands of time, unless Ben or someone who works for Fish or Kevin in the archives could find it. Waking Up, I'll play you. I'll play that right now. Twist, Jennifer, and I Don't Care.
And then how, like, I can almost tell you what time of night certain songs, like that one and a couple others that you hear, you can tell it's 4 a.m, regardless of where you are, Bahamas or Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
Or Newark.
Well, these songs, the order I just read them was the order they were recorded in.
Oh, they were.
And
the last one.
Yeah, so
but it was like, over 3 or 4 days, right?
Yeah, so it's hard to say. I do remember it was probably the first or second night when, as we were going to sleep, we wrote Waking Up. And, you know, ironically, Waking Up because we were tired. And then I actually did go to sleep and I woke up to this incredible version of Twist.
Oh, that's right.
Phenomenal. And it was coming from downstairs. And I think I went upstairs hearing Trey like put down just the very, very first basic chords of it.
And how many hours later?
And then I probably slept for 6 or 7 hours and he just worked straight through.
It's amazing.
And yeah, he fought his way through it. He said the ending was the part that wraps around the wooden twist around. He was having a lot of trouble with. And right when I came down, I was able to sing the weird harmony that I think it's Mike and Paige or Mike and Fish do in the actual song. The wooden twist around that way. Right. That harmony.
Yeah.
So check it out. That's kind of like my contribution. Apart from the lyrics, Trey did everything else.
You slept.
Slept.
Spoken aim for many days, pronouncing it in several ways, and moving letters all around, and substituting every sound.
Twist around that way.
So, anyway, there you have it. That was the songwriting weekend. Thank you, Tebow, for co-hosting.
Lots more to come.
And, yep, a whole hell of a lot more to come. Good night.
Hey everybody, one final note. The songs I played during this episode are the original versions from the writing session I was talking about in 1997. 25 songs from the writing sessions back then were assembled by Beth Montori in the year 2000 into a compilation called Trampled by Lambs and Pecked by the Dove. That phrase is, of course, a lyric from the song Limb by Limb. These songs were recorded by me and Trey as we wrote them, and many of them later appeared as Fish songs on Story of the Ghost and Farmhouse.
To listen to these original songs and for more information, go to underthescales.com.
Also, Trey sang I Don't Care, Not Fishman, the two times it was ever performed live in Europe in 1997.
Thanks for listening to Under the Scales, the podcast about fish fans, their culture, and secrets, if we're lucky. Quick thank you to my producer, Mark Dowd, and my sister podcast, HF Pod. Some of the music you hear in my show is, of course, Fish, but also it's often my old band, Amphibian, with an F. Using songs Anthony cries on and I wrote for our album, Skip the Goodbyes. Find him at njrecordingstudio.com.
I'll interview you if you want as well. Go to underthescales.com and click the Tell Your Story button. If you're at all serious, your submission will definitely get to me. For other matters, write to me at tom@underthescales.com and follow our Twitter here at underthescales. See you next week.